I would definitely put it in the top 10.
It's so good.
A lot more thought has gone into the story.
I think it's awesome.
This is a spy movie disguised as a superhero movie.
There's such clear-cut good and bad.
It's definitely got some horrific elements.
Well, once we go there, you're just going to throw physics out the window.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is like the Fast Times at Ridgemont High of the fantasy world. Yep. Wow. That was something else. Now, kids, your homework tonight is to go home and watch this on television.
At that point in the script, you're actually rooting for her.
And I am just giggling maniacally through the whole thing.
When slashers came home.
I love that they just throw you in there and say, okay, find your way out. A lot of people don't like horror movies.
It's a coming of age, not a horror movie.
But I still love it because it's a slice of life, and I'm okay with that. Tim really wants to like this movie.
I loved the production design.
I wanted more from this movie.
Your reality is not what you think it is.
Oh my God, am I destroying our podcast?
Not since Dracula stalked the earth has the world known so terrifying a day or night.
It is I who renounce you, and in the name of Satan, I place a curse upon you.
Black Sunday is like no motion picture you have ever seen. There are those who believe, and those who do not. But both must know the suspense, the shock of meeting the living dead, and of bringing the dead to life.
You will die, and I can bring you pleasures mortals cannot know.
Black Sunday, the most terrifying motion picture you'll ever see. Satan, wearing strange robes and fighting with all the furies of Hades, arouses the countryside to a frenzy of black terror.
Hello. Hi. Welcome. How are you? You've reached Johnny Has the Keys, where two guys get together. We talk about horror, science fiction, films, television, key elements of a particular topic, film, television, book that we're talking about, and then things that that particular topic may have influenced going down the road or since time or whatever. We've been doing it for quite a few billion years. We are totally unscripted, which you can tell from this lovely intro that I am doing now. But if you're new to us, we're so glad you found us, and we would love for you to tell us how. Leave a little comment down below how you found out about us and everything else. If you're returning, we're glad you're back, and we hope you'll keep returning. Whether you're new or returning, we have a wealth of other episodes back there. So go back and look through our YouTube channel or through the podcast Au Revoir, I guess, and find out all Canon. Any other things we may have done and talk about. My name is David. I'm here with a good friend, Tim. Tim, help me out here. What have you been doing? Been doing something fun?
I thought you were just being experimental and trying to do something different. I didn't realize you were struggling.
I was just, I was all over the place. So I keep going. Never mind.
Hello. That was pretty funny. Of course, I enjoyed watching you suffer as well.
Always.
Oh, let's see. We usually break the ice with a little bit of a genre topic of the week, something that we may have caught our eye, so to speak. And mine actually is called The Evil Eye.
The Evil Eye. John Saxon?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it has John Saxon in it. It was originally titled The Girl Who Knew Too Much, and I had never seen it. It was on my radar because of today's topic, as well as it has been touted as being the first giallo movie ever made. We have talked about giallo movies. It's an Italian term, usually means sort of seedy murder thriller that's gory, for a lack of better concept explanation. It's directed by Mario Bava.
Okay.
It came out in 1963. The cast is really good. It features a beautiful woman named Letitia Roman and a very young, very handsome John Saxon. This would have been, I don't remember when that Dragon Bruce Lee movie came out, Return of the Dragon, that he did. Mm-hmm. That was maybe 1970, I think. So this was a good 7 years before then, probably.
Okay.
It is shot in gorgeous black and white. The shadow play is some of the best I have ever seen. And I'm including Val Lewton movies and Alfred Hitchcock. This movie is gorgeous. It's not as good as some of those Val Lewton movies or Hitchcock, but it's pretty. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
The synopsis is Nora Davis is an American tourist in Rome who witnesses a murder on the Spanish Steps, but is disbelieved by authorities. While investigating with a doctor, John Saxon, also a love interest, she suspects a serial killer is targeting her next. And the serial killer kills people alphabetically, and her last name starts with a D. So she would be fourth, if it makes any sense.
Okay.
This movie only gets 71% of Rotten Tomatoes, and I totally get that. Like I said, it's a beautiful film. It's much more grisly than Hitchcock because, as I said, it's the first giallo movie. There are knives going into bodies or being pulled out of bodies. The problem is it's not really great with the twists, whereas that's where Hitchcock is excellent. These twists are a little less plausible.
Okay.
I will say it is better than a lot of Dario Argento movies, and Argento is often touted as the Italian Hitchcock, where this movie looked like a Hitchcock movie to me, much more so than any Dario Argento I've ever seen.
Wow. Okay.
Unfortunately, though, the music is a bit melodramatic because it is a foreign film. And I guess other than that, it's just known for being the first giallo film, and I finally watched it.
Wow. It's not the best poster. I got to admit, that's not the best poster.
That's funny that you should say that, because it was released in Italy as The Girl Who Knew Too Much, but Samuel Arkoff and AIP started noticing Mario Bava, and started purchasing his film for American release, and they changed the title and probably the poster as well.
All right.
So there's a big connection with Mario and Arkoff and AIP.
Okay.
Which I'm sure we'll talk about a little later. But anyway, that's what I did in my genre week.
I did a kind of weird genre blending sort of thing. There is a little bitty tiny little known author out who's done 23 novels named Nicholas Sparks. And because my wife has been big into romanticy and everything else, she, of course, stumbled upon him and actually listened to a couple of his books or read a couple of his books. And she said, you really should read one or two. And I said, no, not really my genre, romance in general. But I did like The Notebook. It was a good movie. I don't know if I really want to read the novel or whatever. And she goes, oh, you might want to read this one that's coming up because he wrote it with M. Night Shyamalan. And I went, what? And she said, yeah, they've written a book together and they're making a movie out of it. So I immediately went, okay, movie, M. Night Shyamalan, more in my genre. Okay, let's see. So looked into it. Yes, it is a movie novel called Remain is the name of it. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal. It has not been released yet. I don't think it's going to be released till the end of this year. It was originally, when it was originally formulated and when the novel came out a couple of years ago, it was supposed to be out in 25. But now they're saying it's not coming out till probably the end of 26. But I'd listened to the audiobook of it and it's pretty interesting, pretty decent. I can definitely see the influence of both of these individuals on it. It's interesting. Hmm. You can see the romance in it. You can see the just elevated two steps above a Hallmark movie sort of story of a guy who has to go to a different location because he's actually literally been in a mental institution. And now he's going to this remote area to help a friend build his house and finds love there, but is it really love? And are there darker secrets and Wuthering Heights kind of stuff? All that kind of stuff to it. The basic premise, as listed on Wikipedia, is New York architect
Tate Donovan. Does that not sound like a romance hero's name or what? I'm just
Isn't
saying.
That an actor's name?
I don't know.
Jennifer Aniston?
Who? Tate Donovan? Really?
I think so.
You'll have to look that up. Anyway, New York architect Tate Donovan heads to Cape Cod to design a summer home for his best friend, seeking a fresh start after being treated for acute depression. Still mourning his sister's death, he meets Wren, a young woman who disrupts his carefully ordered life. So,
Tate Donovan is an actor. I know he. I'm looking at pictures of him right now.
That's the name of this.
He wasn't ever really a big actor, but you would recognize his face if you saw him.
All right.
He's been in a lot.
I'm sorry he did not get cast in this. Jake Gyllenhaal is playing Tate Donovan in the movie.
And then Jake never dated Jennifer Aniston, I don't think.
But it definitely, you can. Supposedly, they both were like pseudo pen pals and corresponded with each other. Sparks really liked Shyamalan's movie. Shyamalan really liked Sparks' novels. And they jointly came up with this kind of concept. And then they co-wrote the book. They both have credit on it. And they both wrote the screenplay. And Shyamalan is directing the film version. So hopefully, if it's good, he may be on a bit of an upswing. The past like two or three movies that he has done have actually been pretty good. A Knock at the Cabin was great.
Yeah, I liked it.
Old was a pretty cool concept. I wish they had gone to the next level, but it was good and adequate. And I haven't seen Trap yet, but Trap's been getting some good reviews. He might be on a bit of an upswing back into doing some good thrillers sort of thing, which is what he does. He doesn't do horror movies.
It's funny that you mentioned not reading Nicholas Sparks, because my dad was a Clive Cussler, John Sanford, Robert Ludlum type guy, but he read Nicholas Sparks too.
Sparks has great characters. I do admit that. Again, I think his plotting sometimes falls into this sort of elevated Hallmark movie story sort of thing.
Yeah, I could see that. I think he's a little bit more than that, though, than Hallmark.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I said, he's elevated above that, but it's still got those kind of tropes. But then again, a lot of romance do. You have to take your character out of his comfort zone so he can meet the new love of his life sort of thing or whatever. Or her life.
Wow.
Their life. Whatever sort of thing.
Wow. Where do we go from there? You mentioned Wuthering Heights, which was a gothic romance. I mentioned Mario Bava, who was basically the architect of not one but two types of cinema. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about what is known as his best movie, according to most people, and that is a movie called Black Sunday. Where do I begin with Black Sunday? I'll do a really quick synopsis. I'm going to cheat here and read.
Okay.
And that way we can jump right into it. Over 200 years after being executed for being a witch and a vampire, Princess Aja Vada is resurrected by two travelers. Now, I should mention that by being executed, she was to be burned alive, but the rain came and they couldn't keep the fire going. But they do put a giant iron mask on her face with spikes in it and drive it in.
Yeah. I don't think she was alive even after that. That's why I thought it was weird she was screaming on the pyre. I was going, okay, no. She just had spikes driven into her face. I don't think she's screaming. But anyway.
No. Anyway, her and her lover, Yavudich, are both like have these iron spike masks put on their heads, and then they're both buried separately. He's buried in unconsecrated ground. She is buried in the family crypt. So anyway, these two travelers are passing through. It's Thomas Kruvajan and Andre Gorobek. They accidentally disturb her abandoned tomb. At the time of her execution, the princess swore vengeance against her accuser, her brother, and all of his descendants. So the family of Vajda is in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
She quickly resurrects her lover, Yavutich. After she is resurrected by the doctor accidentally, he cuts his hand on some glass and blood drips on her. Then she eventually turns one of the doctors, Cruvijan, into her vampire servant. And then when she learns that a present-day Princess Katia Vajda is identical to her, she sets out to control this young woman. So you basically have Barbara Steele in dual roles as the evil incarnate witch vampire resurrected Aja and as her descendant Katia in the family of Vajda. If you're wondering where all these names come from, it's because this is a Slavic folktale that I will talk about in a minute. What do you know about, or what is your experience with this movie?
I had no experience whatsoever with this movie until...
Oh my God, you've never seen this movie?
I've never seen this movie before. And when people when I would see it on lists or people would mention it, I immediately associated it with Black Sunday, the whole terrorist with a Zeppelin at the Super
Tom
Bowl
Harris.
Or whatever
yeah.
movie.
It's a different movie.
Yeah, but that's what I always thought. I never thought of it as this kind of really cool gothic blended vampire monster story sort of thing. So yeah,
this is your very first time.
This was my first time and I really enjoyed it actually. I think you do, like anything where we talk about doing pseudo period pieces, you have to go into it saying, okay, what was the time frame when it was done and what were they trying to do and all of that. And this being again a foreign film as well, it had a lot of, you have to make a lot of adjustments to it. But as far as cinema goes, telling a story with some really cool sets and really neat photography in places, really good. I think the audio dubbing is horrible. I think the sound mixing is horrible. Not a big fan of the music, especially
the romance music is awful.
Especially the piano. Anytime that piano comes in, you go, oh, it must be a romantic scene coming up.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty weak. And there are some very odd, I don't know if they're historical coincidences, but like the fact that there's a death pit that just pops out of the floor every once in a while.
Yeah.
It's almost like something you'd see on Batman.
Not only a death pit, the guy falls into it and then hangs there for about a day and a half, it feels like.
Until he can help the other guy out.
Until the other guy can help him out. I was going, really?
Yeah.
Really? He was in there this whole time?
There is definitely some convenient storytelling.
Yes. But I do think he tried to anchor it in 200 years ago, the whole story and the myth and the legend of the witch and all of that kind of stuff. I thought that was really cool. I had in my notes that this was Bava's first movie, but I guess...
Actually, it is. It is. You're right.
And for a first movie, it's excellent. It's really good.
It is.
It's
really well shot.
I was going to say just to not have had anything supporting him, any clout, anything else, to come at it this hard with everything. Because there's some really cool stuff. And maybe it is because it's his first movie and he's going, I'm going to do everything I can. Nobody can tell me no because I don't know yet. But stuff like when Khrushchev or whatever is just standing out there near the frog pond smoking, and all of a sudden in the foreground, you just see all of this dry ice fog just sneaking up and moving up to his feet. That was a really cool idea, I thought. And it was just a nice little cheap-ass effect, but it worked.
I'm with you. Sorry about that.
What are you doing? You're not listening to my incredible storytelling?
One of us got disconnected, and now all of a sudden I'm on top.
It just bugs you when you're on top? Okay.
Yeah, I don't like it because now I'm looking at me instead of you. Yeah. I wonder if I could, I don't know. Oh, hang on.
Okay.
Let me see if I can fix this.
You just hang on.
Ah, got it. Okay. Very strange.
Yeah.
All right. A little bit of history about Mario Bava.
Yeah.
You're right. This is his directorial debut. I misspoke earlier, but I got confused because I had done that genre week topic with The Evil Eye. He got his start as a cinematographer. And we talked about this a little bit when we covered Black Sabbath a few seasons back in season 5. He was the son of a cinematographer as well. So you've got three generations of family that are in the filmmaking business. Mario was in the middle. Lamberto came later. Mm-hmm. He went on to direct Demons, a movie that we covered in season six.
Yeah. Those Bava boys, let me tell you.
I'm telling you, there's a lot going on here. Bava worked in many popular genres, including Viking films, peplum, which I had never heard that term before, but it is the Italian word for historical fantasy or sword and sandal movies, which we are very familiar with as kids. Also spaghetti westerns, action, and even a little softcore pornography. But it is the horror and giallo films that stand out for what Mario Bava is best remembered as.
Okay.
He went from becoming a prolific cinematographer to being a prolific director. First movie, Black Sunday. Other genre films include Planet of the Vampires, which is one we need to cover, but it's sci-fi, so you have to pick it. A Bay of Blood, 1971. And, my notes are all jumbled. Apparently, he became a cinematographer in 1939, shooting with Roberto Rossellini. Mm. But he's been a pioneer of Italian genre ever since and is regarded as one of the most influential auteurs of the horror genre, and that is on both sides of the ocean.
Okay.
He's widely credited, as I mentioned in our genre topic, for inventing the giallo film as well as the slasher film, because A Bay of Blood is known also as Twitch of the Death Nerve, was totally ripped off by Sean Cunningham later in the Friday the 13th movies, including lifting directly specific kill scenes and moving them to the Friday the 13th movies.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So Bava has a big place in horror history as far as inventing pretty much two subgenres of horror movies.
Okay.
That no one else has done that. So it's pretty big. I mentioned The Girl Who Knew Too Much, which was The Evil Eye, the genre topic I covered, but he went on to do other giallo movies, including Blood and Black Lace and Hatchet for the Honeymoon. And one thing I forgot to mention when I was doing my genre topic is if you guys have Shudder, there is a wealth of Mario Bava films on Shudder, at least 10. So go watch them because I've been doing that lately and it is a lot of fun. The writer for this movie, all right, let's go back to, okay. The reason that, all right, he was doing really well in sword and sandal movies, and Galatea, the production company that did this film and some of his subsequent films, recognized his talent and said, let's let you direct a movie. What do you want to do? And he said, I want to do Nikolai Gogol's story. It is a story, a scary story that he had told his kids a lot before going to bed when they were children.
Okay. Almost like
it's like a folktale.
Folktale. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. He immediately selected that story because he wanted to do a horror movie because they wanted to capitalize on the success of Hammer's Horror of Dracula, which had just come out 2 years prior.
Okay.
So that's why they did a horror story. However, he did a screenplay, and the guy at Galatea said, this is terrible. You can't write screenplays. We're going to bring in our best. And they brought in a guy named Ennio De Concini, and he adapted the story, and now it doesn't even really resemble the story. The Iron Mask is described in the story, but it's not used as a torture device. And there are elements from the story still present, but it is basically its own story, its own unique story.
Okay.
The original story was published in 1835, and it is about a seminary student who is terrorized by a witch and her demonic servant, the Vayi, which is a gnome, like a small person, on a three-night vigil over her corpse. It's all Slavic folklore. So,
wait,
anyway.
Slavic people are afraid of gnomes?
I don't know.
That's
the reason I explain that is even though it differs from the story, obviously, it's going to be a key later on. What else? He wanted to cast British leads because he thought that would work better in translation to a wider audience, which is why Barbara Steele and I forgot her co-star's name.
Which one? John Richardson?
Yeah, we're cast. Exactly.
That makes sense.
Good reviews plus word of mouth turned this into American International's highest grossing film of the time, exceeding its grosses for Goliath and the Barbarians and Corman's House of Usher. So this was a big money maker for AIP and Samuel Arkoff, who I brought up earlier. But after, although it was shot in English, many of the Italian cast members had thick accents, so the film was completely redubbed for American release, including Barbara Steele. That is not her voice.
Yes, I could tell that. And I've only only seen her in one other thing, which is Pit and the Pendulum.
Which is what?
Pit and the Pendulum.
Oh, okay. She did the remake of Dark Shadows in the 90s. You didn't see that?
No. The remake?
She played Dr. Julia Hoffman.
Okay.
All right. Played by Grayson Hall, I believe, on the original. Anyway, they did a primetime series of Dark Shadows in the 90s. It only ran one season. It had Roy Thinnes in it, and it had Ben Cross as Barnabas and Barbara Steele. Yeah, it was a great cast. I was really shocked that it didn't do well, but it didn't.
Huh.
Anyway,
okay.
I digress. Let's talk. I've given you a ton of production stuff. I didn't mean to yammer on, but what scenes stick out to you in this? There should be a few, I would think.
For me, I guess it would be, I think the opening, again, I say that a lot when we talk about scenes just because we tend to pick movies that have really cool openings. And I do think this one was good, although I'm not big on that narrator. Like I said, I'm not really a fan of any of the dubbing in this and or the sound mixing. There's one fight near the end where there's nothing but a few grunts in it. There's no presence to the audio track at all. And they're rolling on the floor and hitting each other and everything. And you don't hear anything but, and that's all. So
it's like Steve Roey dubbing.
Yeah, it's really bad. But the opening, I liked the two times they do like the aging effect on her, where she goes from old to young, and then later on near the end when she goes from young to old. And
it looks like what we would do in theater, like drawing those lines.
Yeah, and looks so good, though. It looks so much better than all the lap dissolves they were doing with Wolfman and stuff like that. It just looks really well done. I like anything with her when Aja is like in the grave. So I like the eyes growing back and starting to glow. And I liked when they first pulled the death mask off and there's scorpions crawling out of her eye sockets and stuff.
There's bugs all over her face and her sockets are just too big holes.
Yeah, that was really cool. And then later on when he looks at the grave and suddenly Barbara Steele is, her face is there going, looking right at him. I just liked all those scenes. Those were pretty good.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I mentioned that he is known for basically creating two subgenres of horror. Another thing he is known for with the onset of this and giallo movies in general is pushing gore and effects to the front. Like they mentioned, Psycho came out 1 week before this film, and Hitchcock is still doing that stuff with suggestion, whereas Bava was putting it right there in your face.
Oh, yeah. Eyeballs were growing back and people were being strangled. And
for some odd reason, the vampires in this movie don't get stakes in the heart. They get pierced in the eye to kill them.
You have to pierce them in
the
eye.
That's like the method for killing. Yeah, which is very gruesome.
And that opening, when he slams that freaking hammer on the mask and it like squirts out the eyes and the mouth. And I was going, yeah, if this wasn't in black and white, this would be banned.
I thought I had a picture of him. Do I not?
Of who? The mask of Satan or whatever?
I could have sworn I had a picture of the guy with the hammer, the big mallet, but I guess
I don't. Oh, yeah. The big Warhammer hit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the whole opening scene to me is great, too. Any of the scenes with her in the coffin. I love, another one of those coincidences, but all of a sudden a tapestry catches on fire. But when Ivan, or is his name? They call him Ivan, I think. Yeah. But Ivan. He goes in to put it out, and as he's hitting it, he tears through a painting of Yavudich behind it and finds that secret passageway. I think that's really cool. I love that there's a secret passageway behind the flames of the fireplace that opens up like a door.
Yeah, love that. It was really cool. Sets are great. I love all the way through this.
Yeah. And I love after they've turned, what is the doctor's name? They all sound so similar.
Oh, Kruvajek or whatever his name is.
Kruvajah. Yeah, Kruvajah, whatever.
Yeah.
When they turn him into a vampire and he's working with them, I love when that door opens up and him and Yavuzic are just standing there behind the flames.
Oh, yeah.
In the fireplace. It's almost like a Plan 9 from Outer Space shot. Like an Ed Wood shot, but it's really creepy.
I thought you were going to mention the one later on when they go behind the fireplace through the secret door, and then they're going down two hallways, and then they come up to another big tapestry painting, and it turns at an angle and opens, and they have
and
to go
through.
And
it's a nude.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nude of Princess Vaja.
Yeah. Yeah. Or whatever.
Or Aja Vaja.
Yeah. Aja Vaja. Yeah. But yeah. As soon as they went through it, because he like looks at him with the candle, and then he goes through, and I thought of Young Frankenstein with the whole "put the candle back" sort of thing, because it closes.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I love how all of a sudden everything is connected too. All those passageways just go back to the crypt that they originally found her in.
Yeah, that they had to take an entire carriage to get from to the castle. I'm like, really, really? Okay. Yeah.
There's always doors slamming and people not being able to get out, too.
Oh, lots of that.
There's a good bit of convenience. And the fact that they can run past something that all of a sudden drops like a trap door into a death pit.
And I thought it was really interesting, too, that we have this huge, monstrous fireplace with a trap door with a phoenix behind it and everything. But on the left of it, we have a painting of the witch. And on the right of it, we have a painting of the evil, supposedly satanic mentor of the witch.
Yavuzic.
Yeah, because Yavuzic. Yeah, that's what our family does. I have Hitler over here and Goebbels over here, just right beside the fireplace. So.
Yeah. Did you look up any publicity photos?
No. Were there?
Because the publicity photos, they have fangs. You don't see a single fang in this movie.
No.
But you do in the publicity photos, which is funny.
Well, kind of makes sense to advertise it as them as vampires. But because you don't get a lot of vampire in this. You get a lot more witch. There's a lot more reference to witch. She starts out by being burned at the stake. She ends by being burned at the stake. Even when you were given the description, you go, and she turns him into like her vampire servant. And I was like, really? Is he? I guess he is, because he tries to bite somebody at one point, and
yeah,
and Yavuzic or whatever says no, he's for her or whatever. Yeah.
Oh yeah, this movie is influential to a ton of vampire movies, because by the end of it, there's several vampires running around, including her father, the Prince Vaja.
Yeah.
Because she is at, here's a picture of it right here. She is at his grave when he opens his eyes and starts coming after her.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. There's some really creepy stuff in this movie. I can understand why Fangoria and a lot of other publications tout it as really high in gothic horror cinema. And it makes a lot of top 10 before 1970 lists, like top 10 movies before 1970.
I saw that in research and also saw several people mentioning that this was a huge influence on Italian cinema in particular, but also horror cinema internationally. So it even influenced Hammer, which is what it was trying to influence to begin with.
It was actually trying to copy.
Yeah,
exactly. At least the success formula of it. Other scenes, I don't know. I thought it was this scene's stupid, but I thought it was really funny when he's looking at the casket from afar and it just blows up.
Oh yeah, it just literally blows up, and you're going
it's like her grand entrance, but instead of her sitting up and getting out of the coffin, it just blows off of her and she's laying there.
Yeah, just blows. Yeah.
That was very strange.
I think as far as scenes go, you can't – one of the ones that is memorable about this movie is that first meeting of not Aja, but her reincarnated self.
Katya.
In the pseudo-crypt graveyard weird place where they stop. The carriage.
Oh, she's got the dogs?
Yeah. The carriage loses a wheel. And so while the guys, the coachman is repairing it, they go, let's go wander around the graveyard over here. Let's go find a crypt. Yeah. Let me beat everything with this cane that I have.
Yeah.
And then when they come back up, they see her with the dogs and everything else.
And it's very confusing because I was like, wait a minute, we just saw her in the coffin.
Yeah.
Why is she out here with some dogs?
And I thought that was her until five scenes later when they said, no, I saw them earlier in the ruins. And I
went, yeah.
Okay, Barbara, you need to figure out which one you're going to play. Because I wasn't really impressed with her in this. I think she over-emotes in places, and in other places, I can't really tell what she's thinking at all. She just looks like she's just staring.
There's also a lot of notes on how she was really hard or very difficult to work with.
Really?
In this film.
Okay.
But I see it from both sides because he's an Italian director. And I was like, was he pulling the whole macho thing with her?
Oh, probably.
Because there is a scene where it's clear he wanted to show her breast and she's not letting it happen.
Oh, yeah.
But you do see a little bit of them.
Yeah, there is some cleavage.
And she was not wanting to do that. I'm not sure who was who in the right. She has admitted in later years, she is still alive, by the way, that she knows that she was a little difficult when she made this movie.
Okay.
And she said that a lot of times her and John Richardson would just burst out laughing in like very tense induced release because of a lot being on set with a bunch of people that don't speak English and that kind of thing. So it's understandable.
Yeah.
But she went on to become a horror icon because of it, very much like Vampira, or those type actors that came around in the 60s that were. She's the British dame of horror cinema, basically. A lot of people refer to her as something similar to that.
Yeah.
Not unlike someone like Peter Cushing or Christopher Lee, just the female equivalent. And she didn't have as much of a resume.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. She went on to do like Piranha, which I think I talked about a few years back.
Yeah.
Okay. We can move on. I say, since we're talking about her, we'll just go on into cast.
Barbara Steele.
I've got a picture of her here. What's wrong?
No, I just went Barbara Steele. Yeah, let's start with her.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got a picture of her here. If you look up this movie or look up her on IMDb, her picture is very young and she's very pretty and it's in color. I didn't realize that she was trying to become more of a legitimate actor outside of the genre before she got pigeonholed into the genre.
Okay.
And she was in Federico Fellini's 8.5, which is a very prestigious movie for someone to be in, especially another Italian movie, which is ironic.
Yeah.
And she was also in Mario Bava. I mentioned we do not hear her real voice because it was dubbed. After the success of this movie, she was brought to America to star in what you called The Pit and the Pendulum, the AIP movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And soon became typecast. Sadly, after that, she did movies, as I said, like Piranha, Shivers, which is David Cronenberg, and The Silent Scream, which I don't think I've ever seen, but I still remember the commercials for that movie. Her biggest claim to fame is very similar to someone we know from Dark Shadows, Dan Curtis.
Ooh.
She was an associate producer for the miniseries The Winds of War, and that was Dan Curtis's big claim to fame other than genre work.
Okay.
She also produced War and Remembrance, for which she got an Emmy Award. So she eventually got a little bit of serious cred in the late 80s, was it?
Probably. I think that's Winds of War. Out. Yeah.
Winds of War was 83 and War and Remembrance was 88.
Okay.
I mentioned this earlier. Fans were delighted when she showed up again in horror on TV in 1991 in a revival of the beloved Dark Shadows 60s supernatural soap opera, and she played Dr. Julia Hoffman. But aside from everything I have just mentioned, she is best remembered for this movie.
Really? Okay.
So when you see that face right there, that's what she's remembered for.
The face, maybe, but not really the acting overall, in my opinion.
Her opposite in this, playing Dr. Andreas Gorobek, Gorobic. Is that how they say it? Gorobic.
Yeah.
Was John Richardson. Now, he was not a very famous actor either. He was mainly known for playing Tumac in 1 Million Years B.C.
And
opposite Raquel Welch.
I did not even realize that until like halfway through it. And I was going, I've seen this guy before. I know I've seen him somewhere. And then when I researched it afterwards, it said 1 Million Years. I said, oh, yeah, now I know him. Except he had a beard and long hair and everything else.
And that is on our list, but it's classified as sci-fi, so you have to pick it.
All right, 1 Million Years. Gotcha.
And I put it as a double feature, I believe, because it's a remake of an old 30s movie.
All right.
Anyway, he did do Michael Cervi's The Church in the late 80s, early 90s, which is the unofficial third movie in the Demons franchise. Ooh. So there's a little connection to Lamberto Bava there.
Okay, then.
This I found fascinating because I don't know much about him other than the fact that he played the caveman opposite Raquel Welch. But according to director Peter Hunt, Richardson was briefly considered to take the role of James Bond. It was on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is the one that I believe George Lazenby,
yep.
And other actors other than him considered were Adam West.
Yeah.
Wright Campbell, Anthony Rogers, Luke Hansen, and Roy Thinnes. The role went to George Lazenby, and I think it only lasted once, and they ended up recasting, like, Roger Moore or somebody.
Yeah, Roger Moore was next.
But, yeah. He died in, this is not Roger Moore, John Richardson died in January of 2021 of complications to COVID.
Dang. Okay. So
we lost Andre.
Must have been an early
Gorobic.
An early contractor
to COVID. We lost the doctor to COVID.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to be having a lot of stuff with these other guys because everyone else is Italian. But Andre Shashiki played Dr. Kruvajan. That's the name I couldn't pronounce a while ago. Vano Guarani played Prince Vajja, who I mentioned turned into a vampire later on, right there. He is Italian, but he dubbed Larry Talbot in Universal's The Wolfman.
Oh.
When it came to Italy. So I thought that was really cool.
That's cool trivia. Yeah. Both of them I thought were really good. I actually liked Andre Cecchi or whatever his name is more than John Richardson. I thought he was more subtle, much better actor, better
He
scenes.
Was the Peter Cushing role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the prince himself, he only had those two scenes, really, but both – because then he's a zombie, but – or a vampire,
I guess,
whatever. Yeah. Anyway, but those two were really strong and really good.
And he gets killed really quickly because he goes into the fireplace and burns up and they show his face melt.
When he's a vampire, yes. Yeah. It's killed so before that example. By the bad guy in the –
He thwarts Yavutich, I can't say his name, with a cross.
Yeah.
But then later on, they get the cross out of the room, and he ends up being killed.
Yeah.
And then as he's in the coffin later on, he comes back as a vampire, and is only killed again in a fire. But back to dubbing, I mentioned that Ivano Guarani dubbed Larry Talbot in The Wolfman. Arturo Domenici, who played Yavutich.
Ah, okay.
Dubbed not only Gary in John Carpenter's The Thing, but the police commissioner in Assault on Precinct 13.
Okay.
So I don't know if, like, John Carpenter said, if this movie goes to Italy, I want this guy to dub these voices.
Yeah, cool.
But I think it's cool that some of these horror movies that are distinctly American made it to Italy and are dubbed by some of the guys that are in this film.
Yep.
Anyway. And then lastly, Constantine, which I found a weird pronunciation. I always want to say Constantine, but they said Constantine.
Really?
Okay. Was played by Enrico Oliveri. He is also Italian, obviously. As far as awards, there's not a lot because it's such an early film, but it did win a Saturn Award in 2008 for the best DVD collection, the Mario Bava collection, which is like 10 films.
Good.
And it is on the 1001 movies you must see before you die list, which I think's great.
Really? Okay.
Probably again. I have a feeling it's the only Bava.
Probably again because of what we're going to talk about, which is its influence, what it led to. But yeah. I do have in my little trivia and stuff before we do the keys, just a couple of questions, which is in my notes, my watch notes, I put this is a great first film. Ask Tim, how many of these have we had this season? I think we've had quite a few first films this season. We might want to look at that when we
You mean first director?
Yeah. Directed? First time a director has done a film. We might want to look back at that for the recap at the end of the season kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not seeing that many.
But I've got this was a huge influence on cinema, voiceover bad. Where was my thing I was looking at? Oh, I've got this movie ended up being banned like a bunch of places. And then it the full version with everything like what we just saw was not released in England until 1992.
Yeah.
That's 30 years later.
It was very grisly for the time, as I said. It doesn't seem that to us now, but it was at the time.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, in the 80s, England went off the deep end a little bit with that whole video nasties.
Yeah,
and they were yanking videotapes left and right and not letting them out.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then now that's all passed. But, yeah, so it probably was banned in the 70s, and then in the 80s came along, they're like, we're still not going to release it.
This punk music and these spiky hairs scare us, so let's take all the horror movies away. Right. Yeah.
Thatcher.
But a question I have is, why did they do the name change? Because it was called Mask of Satan, and then they made it Black Sunday. Do you know why?
I can't remember which came first. It's like a chicken or the egg thing.
Oh, okay.
I think the Mask of Satan came at once they realized they were going to use those spike masks to kill somebody. But I can't remember. I do know that Black Sabbath was originally titled something else, and they changed it to Black Sabbath because it was directed by the same guy that directed Black Sunday, and they were trying to connect the two.
Huh. Okay.
And honestly, I was going to point this out when we get to Keys, but I'll go ahead and point it out now. Yeah. If you remember right, the third story in Black Sabbath is a story by Leo Tolstoy about vampires. So Baba had an affinity for these Slavic vampire stories because this is one, or it became one, and then the story, the Vertilac from Black Sabbath, was one as well. Oh. So it's, and I think there's a lot of similarities. As a matter of fact, I was going to use it as a key to this movie and the Vertilac from that movie. Same director.
Yeah, I could say that. You can see that just from the cinematography alone. Yeah, I would agree with
but
that.
But I'm not sure which came first. I thought Mask of Satan sounded more like an AIP title. So I was thinking maybe AIP changed it. But maybe it was Mask of Satan and then they changed it to Black Sunday. I don't know.
Well, it definitely has the whole mask thing at the beginning. So that's kind
right.
Of
if anybody out there knows the answer to this, let us know down below because obviously we didn't do enough research on that.
Yeah.
Either that or it's just not out there. But I'm not sure.
Okay.
I thought I had somewhere that it was also called Mask of Satan, but I don't see it. Anyway, I have some trivia as well, though.
Yeah.
In the Italian language version, before they dubbed it, Baza and Yavudic are brother and sister. So it hints at an incestuous relationship. This is not part of any of the versions we see.
No, because the dubbing had her brother was the one that actually condemned her. He was the one that actually had her in the mask and burning her.
In this world that we live in now, where we have Criterion and all these wonderful things that go back and find these original versions of movies and put them together, why don't we have the original version of this?
I don't know.
Where is the dubbed Italian version of it? I want to see that one. But anyway.
I'm sorry, you can't.
Again, I mentioned it was deemed for its day, it was considered unnecessarily gruesome and was banned, as you said, in the UK until 1968. Then it was heavily cut, and the full uncut version never came out until 1992. Only the third horror film produced in Italy with sound.
Wow. Okay. Didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. And you know why?
Because the music was so good with the piano?
No. Why do you think movies didn't come? Why do you think sound movies were so late?
I don't know.
Mussolini. He banned the genre during his dictatorship.
Why does that not surprise me? Yeah, we don't want people to think. Don't let them hear things.
No.
Perfect.
And that's not all movies sound. Sorry, that's horror movies in sound. But yeah. Mussolini didn't like horror movies. What else?
I have...
Tim Burton has said this is his favorite movie.
That's a good key. Yeah, I had on my notes that Burton says, his actual quote was, "It's one of the films that made me understand the power of cinema." So I thought that was interesting. I've got the sets were reused for a movie called Kill Baby Kill. I haven't seen that movie, so I can't compare them.
I watched it last night.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. The funding got pulled halfway through the movie, and they had to finish it. No one thought they were getting paid, and it's got some great moments, but I felt sorry for Baba because he's basically just filming in this old abandoned house and people are running around. Yeah. Actually, it gets high rankings on Rotten Tomatoes. It's okay for what he had.
Playing Corman for the weekend. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's kind of like a Baba version of Corman. Okay. And before folks quote down below with answers, I just found them. The film was rejected for UK cinema in 1961. The uncut version was released as Mask of Satan with a 15 certificate on the UK Redemption video label in 1992.
Okay. Well.
So I guess they didn't call it Mask of Satan until 1992.
Huh. Interesting. And then now they've gone back to the original title. So, yeah.
Who knows?
Keys I have, of course, Val Lewton. I think this is a very Val Lewton inspired, especially with the lighting and some of those, what do you call them? Almost like those zoom effects where it closes in on the face as she's staring at you thing reminded me of a Val Lewton kind of look to it.
I put the original novella by Nikolai Gogol.
Yes, of course.
The Vie. It's spelled V-I-Y. But it's pronounced
V-I.
No, excuse me, V-I. It's pronounced V-I.
V-I. Okay.
V-I. Yeah. I have a pretty good one that you may have seen in IMDb, but Richard Donner modeled the whole cemetery scene in The Omen after the scene on Barbara Steele in the graveyard with her hounds.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I love that scene. That scene in The Omen is one of my favorite scenes in horror movies, period.
Period. It is a great scene. That whole sequence is
a great scene.
The demon dogs or hellhounds and everything. It was a great scene.
Wallers.
I have Francis Ford Coppola, as far as influences, has said that he crafted many scenes in when he did Bram Stoker's Dracula, inspired by this movie, especially the carriage scenes. And watching it, I went, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. So he does all those side looks up at the guy on the carriage, and you just see the sky behind him or the clouds and everything. He's almost in silhouette. Mm-hmm. Very much Coppola's Dracula. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of a name of a movie. First of all, I'm going to say Salem's Lot, just because there's a lot of vampires running around.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a witch movie, but there's so many witch movies where they're like burned at the stake. What's a famous one? The Witch doesn't really work. No. Not the more recent movie, The Witch.
More Midsummer works. It ends with the burning, but it's not
that's
The Witch.
That's what I was thinking.
But Midsummer, but I don't – that's a good question. Witches – where they burn witches at the stake –
other than The Crucible or like Salem.
Yeah.
But I know there's been other movies where witches were burned at the stake.
Yeah. Let us know down there in the
I've
comments because we're
probably
both drawing
just
a blank.
Not worth remembering. Yeah. I don't know.
I've
got another list of a bunch of movies I've never heard of.
Ooh, okay.
Or at least most of them. The Inquisition themed imagery in the beginning of the movie has influenced horror films mainly in the 60s, but even beyond, including, and these are some movies I've never heard of, The Brainiac, 1962, Terror in the Crypt, 1964. Bloody Pit of Horror, 1964. The She-Beast, 1966. The Blood Demon, 1967. And The Haunting of Morella in 1990. But most prominently, this image was used from Tim Burton in Sleepy Hollow, in the scene where Lisa Marie emerges from an Iron Maiden with her face punctured.
Yeah.
Not Katya, but Aja.
Yeah, definitely Iron Maiden. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, wait. And he said Sleepy Hollow is modeled after
this. Wasn't that Vincent Price movie, The Inquisitor, or The Worm, The Conqueror Worm? Didn't they burn witches in that? Oh, The Conqueror Worm.
They definitely hung them. I don't remember.
You said Inquisition, and I suddenly saw Vincent Price in that colonial.
But you know what? That's a good one, though. That actually does apply. I'm going to put that in there.
I've got Hellraiser. Because it's drops of blood that bring her back, bring back the evil.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, that's great.
And so that was done. And I've also got
Dorian
Gray because, and I'm not sure if I'm sure about this, but I took it in my notes, so I'm going to say it anyway. It looked like her painting from the first time we see it when Dad is sitting there at the fireplace and Katya's playing the piano until later on when the Andre shows up and everything else, it gets younger. The painting seems to get younger. It's not as old and ugly as of a witch at the beginning, near the end of it. So
I
don't know, but I put in my notes, the painting reminds me of Dorian Gray. So there you go.
You know, the picture of I can't say his name. Yavudich.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yavudich. It looked like the same pose as Dorian Gray.
Yeah, it did, actually.
Stance.
Very true.
For sure. Yeah. I don't know that I have anything else. I think that Clive Barker's great, though. I could see where he was totally influenced by this movie as a kid.
Oh, definitely.
Except he lived in England, so how did he see it?
Oh, yeah. I've got Hammer in general. We mentioned it earlier, but it needs to be in the notes just because they said they're trying to copy Hammer. And then I think Hammer, it feels like a Hammer movie with the production design, the costume, the sets. Everything feels very Hammer-esque in it.
What I read about this movie and its timing is that it was specifically targeting Horror of Dracula and Curse of Frankenstein, which were the two first Hammer movies that were horror and in your face.
And Universal should be in there too, because at the end of this, you suddenly have the entire village grab their pitchforks and their torches and go running.
Frankenstein, yeah.
No, very Frankenstein, very Universal sort of thing. And I've got one I actually lifted from a review I watched, which was the moving camera, especially in stuff where you're feeling like you're the witch's spirit or whatever, and you're moving through the castle and it's knocking the suits of armor over and blowing the tapestries and the candles and everything. This reviewer I was watching said it reminded him of Evil Dead, of the moving camera being the evil spirit kind of thing.
I concur with that, but I also thought of another when you mentioned it, is when they're going through the house and you're seeing the suits of armors and things. Yeah. That's very much like Robert Wise, The Haunting.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good one,
so
too.
It's a castle instead of a house, but it still has that same presence. I mean.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Wow.
We did good.
It's a good film. I'm glad it finally made it on our... It's always been on the list. I'm just glad I finally chose it because I did Black Sabbath first.
and, like I said, I had never seen it before. So it was a very...
I'm shocked. Refreshing. That really shocks me.
Sort of thing. But again, Italian horror, not really my go-to sort of thing. Right. So, even in the past, when you would say Mario Bava, I'd go, okay, sure.
Planet of the Vampires.
Yeah, it's going on the list.
Do Planet of the Vampires.
Okay. That's what Tim and I think of this obviously very influential film. In general, we'd love to know what you guys think. Leave us a comment down below. Did you like Black Sunday? Do you not like Black Sunday? Do you like Barbara Steele in it? And what about that bat that's the size of a human flying around a crypt? What did you guys think? We'd love to know what you think. Let us know. Also, subscribe, sign the list, ring the bell, do all the things. That way you can find out more stuff of what we're doing. We're approaching the end of this, our eighth season. We're coming up soon, and we'll be start prepping our ninth. So also, if you have ideas for what you might want to see us, want us to do in the future, we always take requests, sort of thing.
Viewer requests.
We would love to have your request for that. If you do like us reminiscing about stuff, we do have a Patreon, and we would love to have your support there. It helps us keep doing this and continuing to do this. We have some free content there as well as some other podcasts that we cover, from the Dilithium Chamber, which is classic Star Trek, to X-Files Declassified, which is the X-Files. And we finished 4 seasons of X-Files. Yeah, 4 seasons of X-Files. And we're on season 3 of Star Trek going right now. So that kind of dates when we do this. There you go. Tim, next week, what do we do? Do we do something fun next week?
Again, we're doing a unique sci-fi movie that I don't know much about.
Oh, good. That'll be fun then.
But it has an actor in it that you don't like.
Yay, it gets even better. Can't wait. But yeah, so join us next week.
Oh, it's a viewer request. Speak of the devil.
It is a viewer request. That's right. So we'll look forward to seeing you guys back next week for that one. Until then, Tim, I'll see you soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.